In today's episode of Movie Rollers, we review three big releases: Iron Man 3, Star Trek, and The Great Gatsby. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Yay, we're back together.
In person.
Yes.
It feels like a long time.
Well, we have had a bit of a recording hiatus.
Well, we had enough in the bank. We had enough recorded that we were able to get them out. But yes, it's been a while. Yes.
Imposed by our vacation.
Yes.
Rashmi and I went to Bangkok and Cambodia.
And not just in your dreams. You actually did.
Yes, we did. Yes, we
in fact, I should say Thailand, because Bangkok is not a country.
That's right.
It's like the country of Bangkok.
But we did have two film experiences. So we went to some of the temples where Lara Croft was filmed, the Tomb Raider. These aren't things to brag about, but they're kind of film references. And we went to the hotel where Hangover 2 was filmed.
In Bangkok.
Those are both rather dubious.
Yes, they
are. But be that as it may, yes.
Movie Wallah's always working. We thought it was our duty to go to these places.
Yes.
We saw a ton of good films on the plane, though.
Yeah. Yes.
Saw a couple of movies that I haven't heard of. One was a British film called Broken, about a girl who basically witnesses somebody being beaten up in her neighborhood right in front of her eyes, and then the story kind of develops from there, which was a terrific little film.
Really good film, yeah. Huh. And another English film.
I Give It a Year, which was...
That sounds funny.
With Steve Merchant, had Rose...
Rose Byrne. As the main protagonist.
Is she British?
She is.
Oh, wow.
Is she British?
I think she is, yeah.
Rose Byrne does sound like a very English name.
Yeah, and it's actually... I haven't seen her play the main protagonist in a film, and she carried it really well. But it's basically about a couple in their first year of marriage. Very good. Very funny.
Terrific little movie, actually. Yeah, that was funny. Very funny.
Gosh, and then I watched like a ton of movies. In fact, I didn't actually sleep on the 24-hour journey back, and probably watched about 12 films in total.
Can you remember any of them?
Jack Reacher. I watched 300 again.
I watched a couple of films that I should have watched a long time ago.
Yeah.
I finally saw Good Will Hunting.
Oh, I love Good
Fabulous.
Will Hunting.
Fabulous. Who was that director?
Gus Van Sant,
thank you. Yeah, what a great movie. And also saw What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Oh, with a very young Leonardo DiCaprio.
It was in the classic section of the movie. I'm not sure I would call it a classic, but I can understand why Leo got a good launch from that. That was a terrific performance by him in that movie.
I love that nobody's made a movie like that since or before that.
Really good stuff, so...
I can't remember. I wrote down everyone I watched, but I can't remember any of the ones I watched now. It's ridiculous.
You're in that haze, right? You're in that special place.
Yeah. Not quite asleep, not quite awake.
Right. Yeah.
On the plane.
Yep.
The little screen. And
I was snoring away. I had to get some sleep. All right. Well, let's talk about our three movies of the week. I think we should start with Star Trek. So who's introducing that?
Me.
So what's the full title of this? I keep calling it Star Trek.
It's called Star Trek Into Darkness.
Okay.
So, let me see if I can make that dramatic. Star Trek Into Darkness. When the crew of the Enterprise is called back home, they find an unstoppable force of terror from within their own organization has detonated the fleet and everything it stands for, leaving our world in a state of crisis. Sound familiar? When a personal score to settle, Captain Kirk leads a manhunt to a war zone world to capture a one-man weapon of mass destruction. As our heroes are propelled into an epic chess game of life and death, love will be challenged, friendships will be torn apart, and sacrifices must be made for the only family Kirk has left, his crew. So this is directed by J.J. Abrams. It's written by Alex Kurtzman, Damon Lindelof, and Roberto Orci. And it stars most of the crew from the first one. So Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, Carl Urban, Benedict Cumberbatch, John Cho, Zoe Saldana, Anton Yelkin, Simon Pegg, and many others. So, Yazdi, I'm dying to hear what you thought of this one.
So the funniest thing happened. I came out of this movie and I wrote down my notes. I always try to write them the same evening. And what I wrote in my notes was that the movie carries the distinct honor of being simultaneously a considerable accomplishment as well as a bit of a disappointment.
Oh.
But then, you know, I've been thinking about this movie and it hasn't left me.
Hmm.
And I've kind of learned, or not learned, I've kind of realized that I love the movie a lot more. So I think almost a week after having seen the movie, I've almost completely forgiven the disappointments in the movie, and it's just risen and it's shining ever more for me. I really love this movie. And every day I wake up, I seem to love it a little bit more.
And you haven't gone to see it again?
No.
Okay, so I'll be interested to hear the disappointments. Joe?
Well, I have plenty of disappointments. Now, I think unlike the rest of the world, I was not a huge fan of the Star Trek reboot that we got a couple of years ago.
Boo!
I know. And I've had this discussion with many people. Anyone that knows me knows that I was a diehard Star Trek nerd. Now, I was more of a Next Generation guy, I'll admit that. Because, you know, when I grew up, the Next Generation was on TV. It was really big and a lot of fun. And I did, as I got older, kind of start to appreciate the original Star Trek series more, but I love the whole Star Trek universe, that whole, I didn't care for any of the spin-offs, you know, this Deep Space Nine and all that kind of stuff. But this reboot had me really excited in 2009. And when I went to see it, there was just a hair of disappointment. And I think this movie underlines what disappointed me so much. They've taken the whole Star Trek concept and they've turned it into a buddy movie and an action movie. And it's nonstop thrills and spills. But for me, it didn't have anything that I could really connect with at an emotional level. It was a great, fun action movie. It was very bombastic. Yasti, I saw a post of yours on Facebook comparing this movie to Indiana Jones. And that's exactly what it was, Indiana Jones. And it was not the good Indiana Jones. It was a Temple of Doom Indiana Jones, where they're constantly bumbling from one scrape to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. And this string of lucky escapes gets a little boring for me.
It's going to be one of those shows. So I'll sum this up by saying this to me was a sci-fi with as much heart as great action. I absolutely love this movie. And like you, Joe, I didn't love the original reboot. But I love Chris Pine.
Both of you.
But I love Chris Pine. I love Chris Pine as Kirk, and I love Zachary Quinto as Spock. But I really like this movie. It felt like the cast had settled into their groove and there was a great chemistry. And I love the buddy aspect. So I, unlike you, Joe, my older sister loved Star Trek in the 70s. And so
The original series.
No. And so I was a great fan of the original series. And I actually didn't pay much heed to any of the others that came after the original. I really love this movie. I like you, Yasti. I just enjoyed it. I thought it was really fun.
See, the reason why I like the original reboot from J.J. Abrams was because, you know, we're in almost the fifth decade of the whole Star Trek universe since Gene Roddenberry originally started, you know, the TV show. And, you know, at this point, you know, there have been four or five different television series. You know, there have been umpteen, like more than a dozen films which have been made across the different, you know, Star Trek universes. And, you know, no matter of villain has been left unexplored. No kind of story has been left, you know, unaccounted for. And there isn't much emotional heft, you know, remaining to be squeezed out of these characters. And towards the end of, you know, 2000, you know, Star Trek had become a punchline. You know, late night comic shows would make fun of Star Trek. It was really very square and it had become something uncool. And, you know, people weren't fond of Star Trek. People looked at Star Trek as something cheesy, something from a previous generation that has to be mocked at. And I think, therefore, J.J. Abrams had this tremendously high level of difficulty to make them relevant, to make them fun, and most important, to make them kind of cool and of the current time. And I think that movie accomplished that. Because I went with very high expectations, and it exceeded that. And so my actual problem with this movie is that my regard for that original J.J. Abrams reboot is so high that nothing can almost reach that level. And I think this movie almost claws at it, but doesn't quite get there, which it would be almost impossible, I think, for anybody to get there. But I do fully agree with what you said, Rashmi. Those characters have really settled in.
Yeah.
And, you know, I loved you know, I loved Scotty and I loved, you know, Uhura and I loved, you know, the Bones, you know, the Doctor. I mean, these are such archetypal characters.
Yeah.
That for somebody else to kind of inhabit them without making them seem silly or too deferential is very difficult.
And I don't disagree with anything that you said there. I think everything that you said there is absolutely true. I think you're a little hard on the way that Star Trek was perceived, because I don't think it became this joke. I mean, there was the followers of Star Trek, you know, there were the Trekkie nerds, you know, the people that, you know, did the Klingon hand signals and
all that
and
language
the stuff. And yeah, right. All that kind of stuff. But, I don't think it was quite the joke. And I think, for me, Star Trek was always a lot more cerebral than this particular adaptation of the series has been. The thing that I think bothered me most in this movie was they've made it an action movie, right? They're constantly getting into, like, near escapes, and there's all this stuff that's going on, and they just manage to save themselves, and they get, you know, they go from the frying pan into the fire, and then they get out of that. And it for me, it ended up a little boring because,
really,
like, the two are...
When did you have time to be bored?
The second or third life or death escape, I was like, okay, these guys are untouchable. And even at the end, when they really turn the heat up and there's some, you know, there's some difficult stuff to deal with, there's some character surprises. By that point, I just knew that the franchise was not going to let anything happen to these characters in this movie. And so I think for me, it really, it took away a lot of the sense of what would have been a very dramatic moment. And just to finish my point, I recently watched The Wrath of Khan. So I recently watched The Wrath of Khan, and that movie is so much better on every level than this movie. It has a lot less action, but the whole bad guy dynamic, the whole suspense, drama, and the way the movie ends was so much more accomplished than anything that this movie has to offer for me. I just, it doesn't compare.
So this is the thing. We're in 2013, and I don't think something like The Wrath of Khan in its original form would
be as... You have to watch it again.
No, I agree. If you're watching it again, it's a different matter. But I think to an audience of somewhere between, you know, 16 and 35-year-olds, which I believe is the target, then that's not the movie we're looking for in this time.
Yeah, because we've dumbed down our audience.
Yeah, we have, and this is a summer blockbuster, right? We're well into the summer blockbuster of films, and we like action. We like action, we like style, and we like buddy movies, and so I think this has all those checkboxes ticked. But for me, that feeling of a new Star Trek really came through, and I think, like you, Yazdi, it was very successful for me.
I mean, I think this is a great theme because it's going to continue through all three movies that we're going to talk about today is, you know, how do you adapt a well-regarded classic? Okay, what approach do you take?
Movies,
you know, what approach do you take? And I think a lot of the criticism for each of these three movies has to do with this, you know, what kind of tonal, you know, adaptation has been conducted? What's the tone of it? And I fully agree with you that, you know, at its fundamental, especially the Star Trek The Next Generation, which I, like you, Joe, I'm a huge fan of, you know, nobody's going to touch Jean-Luc Picard as the captain. But that aside, I think Star Trek at its core was about ideas. It was not as much about actions. It was about, you know...
Right.
Right. And so I understand that this whole reboot is not so much about ideas. It's more about... It is about ideas, but that's not the focus of it. There's a lot of physicality to it. But it's so goddamn entertaining. And, you know, and it's not like entertaining in a dumb, you know, people beating each other up kind of way. I think it's rooted in great dialogue. It's rooted in characters who we know. And
twists and turns, twists and turns. And I think, like you, Yazdi, I think there were actually really good humor and comedy at the right time. But more than anything else, this is one thing I give the film props for. And you know how I always go on about crazy costumes and makeup? These are some of the best monsters I've seen since the first time I saw Star Wars. Those monsters that they had
Monsters?
Exactly.
What monsters?
There were so many monsters. There were alien beings and monsters and
I think Rashmi was jet lagged.
At the start and on the ship, there were so many different aliens.
Right.
But they were the best, most imaginative aliens I've seen in a long, long time.
All right.
I mean,
okay.
I mean, I think,
didn't have to respond to that because I don't remember them. I found them, they weren't very memorable for me.
I know, but isn't that great? Because they were there, but it was very natural.
But Star Trek, again, I think, you know, we've always had the
yeah, but there were crazy things.
They've always had the humanoid. Every alien in Star Trek universe is humanoid, you know, regardless of whether you're Romulan, Klingon, you know, they're all basically, you know, men in masks. So, you know, they carry on with that here. So I didn't find them especially memorable.
I mean, I think these are characters that people have known for 5 decades, and it's very difficult. I mean, if somebody asked me to play any one of those characters, I would run a mile away because there's no way to win that. And I think J.J. Abrams has found a way to win that because it's not just one or two characters; it's every single character. Yeah. They respect the original characters, but still bring some wit to it. They still bring some humor to it, you know, especially Zachary Quinto. You know, I mean, is there a more, iconic character than Spock? And to kind of, you know, keep the respect for Leonard Nimoy while still being his own independent character, it's very difficult. And I think there's a lot of success there.
I think therein lies my problem. I'm too in love with the original characters. I'm too in love with William Shatner's Kirk. I think that...
See, I love Chris Pine's Kirk. I was going to say is delightful.
I won't say I can't stand him, but I find him too cocky. And I know, that's the whole thing about Kirk, right? But... I find him a step up, and maybe it's because he's got these, you know, really good boyish looks and he's got that smile.
Are you jealous?
No, he's the jock, right? I think it's the nerd in me who was beaten up by people like him that kind of rejects that. And I don't buy Zachary Quinto's Spock in the same way. I find he reminds me very much of the Next Generation character Data. He's a little robotic and the whole logic side of the, Vulcan mythology doesn't come through. They're focusing more on his human, half-human.
Right.
You know, Spock, I didn't know for a long time that Spock was half-human, right? They never made a big deal of that. He was always very Vulcan. And so that kind of appealed to me, whereas here they're kind of straddling the line between this, you know, they're obviously trying to depict this guy who has difficulties with the fact that he has these emotions, but I'm just finding that a little hard to deal with. This isn't to say that I hated this movie, so I'm going to stop with the bitching and moaning because I did actually enjoy the movie. It's just, it's not a great entry in the Star Trek franchise from my perspective.
So that sounds like a summing up.
Are we ready to sum up? Or yes, you've got a ton more notes and points.
I have a ton of more, but if I have to pick faults, you know, you can pick faults. Like, you know, what's up with those glares? What's about with those lens glares? Did you guys notice every scene in the
Star Trek thing, though?
Was it? Is he paying homage to Star? I mean, every scene has these lens flares. Like, there's 4 or 5 little. I don't know how to describe it technically.
You know what a lens flare is? Mm-hmm. When you kind of have a light source on a movie, and then you get these little circles almost of color that, you know, move because that you can see the refraction in the glass, that kind of thing. That's lens flare. But that's always been
I'd beat you up if I was a jock.
You see what I mean? This is always been a big space movie thing because, and typically it's always been in space movies because you have this really dark space background and then you have these bright light sources and that's what causes lens flare. You'll notice it if you point your camera at the sun. Right. So he does that a lot.
It's in almost every scene.
I think it's kind of cool. I like that.
But it's in every scene. I thought originally that, it has to be deliberate. It can't be something that just happened.
It's something that most cinematographers will work to get rid of.
Right.
Because it's a distraction.
Right.
But I think it's part of the look of the Star Trek universe.
And then the other thing is, you know, the 3D, completely unnecessary. I mean,
we didn't see it in 3D.
I was going to say.
Did we?
I can't remember.
I don't think we saw it in 3D.
No, we did see it in 3D, and I remember, because I spoke with Toby about this afterwards, I spoke with our friend Toby, and I said, you know what, don't bother with the 3D, because it doesn't, it's not additive. It's not, you know, and I'm glad they weren't throwing things at me throughout the entire movie.
Wow, that's amazing. Maybe it was so good that we forgot.
No, the fact that it was in 3D was, you know, neither here nor there. Yeah. That was just to get you an extra $5 per ticket.
Yeah. And I also think some of the scenes were action. There was a lot of
action.
Too long. But there was a lot of hyper-cutting. Like, you know, it's you know, little splice scenes put very close to each other. It's almost hard to follow what's happening to whom. Again, you know, all minor quibbles. I think I do want to talk about something you brought up in the passing very early on, Rashmi, which is that I think they did absolute, and I know you're going to hate me for saying this, but I think they did absolutely the right thing by making this movie about there's a lot of relationships here, but the crux of the whole movie from the start to the end is about the relationship between Kirk and Spock.
I loved it.
And I loved it you know, and there's a scene towards the end of the movie, which I was rather moved. I wasn't crying or anything. I was moved, but people in the cinema, when I saw it, they were laughing. They were actually laughing because they found it odd. And
I had a lump in my throat if it's the same scene.
I think it is the same scene. But people were, I'm like, really? Have people become so jaded and stupid that the idea of a friendship between two guys automatically makes them laugh?
No, I was among the people who were giggling. And the reason for it is not the reason you think. It's to do with, well, in fact, in even to explain it is a slight spoiler, right. So I'm not going to go there. Okay. I'll tell you after
talk
the show.
About it later, yeah.
Maybe I can put something at the end of the podcast, but it is a spoiler, and I know exactly why they were laughing. But
okay,
I liked it.
So and then I think what might have improved this movie. By the way, great villain. I love Benedict Cumberbatch. He's, you know, he's perfect. You know, I don't know. I thought he was. You know, he wasn't too mean, he wasn't too evil, but he was sly and he was playing tricks and you didn't know where he was going. Of course, it makes sense once you find out who he is.
Yeah.
But, you know, great stuff. I wish the movie had a little bit more emotional heft, and I wish the movie, and this is an odd thing to say, I wish the movie was a little sexier.
Oh, what do you mean by that?
Like, I want it to be, you know, it's about little boys usually like to watch Star Trek, but this one seemed very like, you know, collars up kind of movie.
We had a naked Alice Eve.
Well, barely for all of 2 seconds.
So we actually wanted more boobs.
Yeah, well, maybe not boobs, but maybe more cleavage at least. Something more skin.
Oh, like more thigh.
Which reminds me, did you ever see Spring Breakers?
No.
Oh.
I need to see that, yeah. But anyway,
I've had enough boobs for like 3 years with that one.
Okay. Anyway, minor quibbles all. So.
Okay, let's sum this up then. So, Joe, why don't we go back to your summary then?
So, another bombastic J.J. Abrams entry into the Star Trek series. I think this movie, for me, was just a little too jam-packed with cliffhangers that ultimately, I think, it lost tension. It was a lot of fun and absolutely entertaining, but if you compare this against some of the classic Star Trek movies from the original series, this ultimately is a little bit like remember the Next Generation movies? They weren't good, right? The original, and even most of the original Star Trek movies, it was a funny joke where every other one was good.
Correct.
You know, 2, 4, and 6, amazing films. So the other ones are kind of disposable. Yeah. You'll have a lot of fun watching this. It's not a bad movie. I liked it a lot. I just didn't love it. And I think, ultimately, I think the direction that this franchise has taken isn't to my taste. And that is just where I stand as my particular brand of Star Trek fan.
Score?
8 out of 10.
That was like poo, 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 poo. Yeah. 8 out of 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Make sense.
Yeah, you know what?
Yeah. I love the movie and I'm going to give it 8.
Let me redo that. That was a 7 out of 10.
Oh, okay, no.
Okay, good.
No, it was true. It's true because I'm like looking at my notes here. I didn't write down the score, but I was trying not to be hard on a movie. But anyway, 7 out of 10.
Okay, Yazdi.
Ridiculously high level of difficulty. Considering that, what they've accomplished is tremendous. This is a very accomplished movie in many ways, and we're going to keep talking about this, but, you know, it's all going to come down with how you expect somebody to tonally adapt a beloved classic, and this is the issue at play here. I loved it, and the more, like I said, the more I think about it, the more I love it. I think, you know, they did it right. I think they got it right. And I cannot wait for the next in this installment. So I give it an 8 out of 10, which seems a little bit stingy. But, you know, compared to some of the other big blockbuster movies I've seen this year, this is ahead of the class.
Yeah, I think fans will really like the references. If you're a fan of Star Trek, I think you'll like the references and the throwbacks. I certainly did. I thought it was a good story arc with appropriate twists and turns. Again, Yazdi, I agree with you. My only gripe was that this was a little bit too long, and it could have been a little bit shorter with a few action fight scenes being a little bit shorter. They went on a little bit too much. But I, like you, cannot wait for the next one. And who else is excited about the J.J. Abrams Star Wars reboot? Well, not reboot, but episode seven.
See, I was always a Trekkie. I never got into Star Wars. Oh. So for me, it can only get better.
So now I'm worried that Joe's not going to like the new Star Wars either, if it's J.J. Abrams.
You know, he does a good job. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, I didn't give a score.
Yeah, what was your score?
So thanks for not even noticing. my score is
eight
out of 10. I really enjoyed this movie and I loved it more than the first one.
And I think that's the thing. You know, I recognize fully that I'm in a tiny minority here. The original Star Trek reboot from 2009, 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's after all the reviews came in. It's almost unanimously positive. So, you know, I recognize that there's something wrong with me in this particular aspect, in that it's just not clicking with
you
me.
You need beating up.
Later. But
yeah, after I've gone.
But yeah, anyway, let's move on to our next movie of the week then.
Can I make one other comment?
Mm-hmm.
Horrible, horrible, horrible title for the movie. Completely irrelevant. I mean, it's some generic. I kept thinking there was some reference to Into Darkness. There isn't one. It's some generic thing.
I think it's a great title. I think it's like a metaphor of everything you believe in and suddenly it's gone and then you're in darkness.
Yeah, but
like your light is gone. Let's leave it with that. I don't want to say any more, but...
But it could have been Star Trek Solemn Despair, for example. It's so generic.
Maybe that's what the next one will be.
Star Trek Dark of the Moon.
Right. I mean, it seemed like somebody at Paramount came up with some title which looked catchy, which had nothing to do with the plot.
You know what? They didn't want to call it Star Trek 2. We've already had a Star Trek 2, right? So
I liked Into Darkness.
And there's no punctuation. Star Trek Into Darkness, four words. I wanted a colon or a comma or a semicolon. But okay, we are being picky. Let's move to the next movie.
Difficult crowd tonight.
Seriously. Good job. Rashmi and I didn't see the next movie then, which was The Great Gatsby, because I don't know.
I'm excited to hear what Yazdi thought of this.
So just by way of introduction, The Great Gatsby. The Great Yazdi. The Great Gatsby is the adaptation, another adaptation of F. Scott Fitzgerald's 1925 novel of the same name. The movie was co-written and directed by Baz Luhrmann, who I believe was famous for, Rashmi, one of your favorite movies, Strictly Ballroom, from 1992.
And then one of my unfavorites,
Moulin Rouge, Romeo and Juliet. And also Australia, which was this huge, great big flop. But so he's got a pretty good CV here. The movie stars Leo DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire, Carey Mulligan, and Joel Edgerton, and follows the life and times of millionaire Jay Gatsby and his neighbor Nick, who recounts his encounter with Gatsby at the height of the Roaring Twenties. Movie went on general release on May 10th, and again, Rashmi and I weren't able to see this, but Yazdi, you were, so give us the beans.
So I think the theme we talked about in the previous movie is completely applicable here. I think how much you dislike this movie or like this movie depends on how willing you are to give in to the director's vision.
Mm.
And this is, by any stretch of the imagination, this is completely a Baz Luhrmann production.
Big rubber stamp.
To the extent that it completely obliterates, you know, F. Scott Fitzgerald. Now, is there a greater novel, you know, with the exception of maybe, you know, How to Kill a Mockingbird? You know, this is considered the great American novel, the great American book. And so, you know, people are really coming out hating this movie. I loved it. I loved every minute of it.
Really?
Because I embraced the fact, I read the book like a few years ago. It wasn't part of my curriculum. I knew it was a big classic. It's a very quick read. I read it like it's, you know, 150 pages.
Another one that needs beating up.
On my free time, I like to read the old classics. Call me a fuddy-duddy. But anyway.
I would be the jock of us three. I hate to say that.
Good job, you're a girl.
Yeah.
That said, you do beat me up. But anyway.
But when I was watching the movie, you know, I gave up on trying to make the movie be like the book. And I just said, this is somebody's interpretation of the movie. So let me say this. You know, everybody who is reviewing movies right now in America, right now in 2013.
Us included?
Possibly, yes. Okay. I think they had The Great Gatsby. They wrote a term paper on The Great Gatsby. You know, they had it as part of their curriculum. And Gatsby is a very cryptic character in the book. And I think everybody wrote a term paper on it. And therefore, everybody thinks they know Gatsby. Everybody has their own interpretation of Gatsby. And Gatsby is many things on many levels. On one level, it stands for the character of Gatsby stands for America. You know, it's you know,
greed.
Somebody who came up from nothing and became very powerful and almost was a victim
of excesses
and so forth. So people think they understand Gatsby, and then they watch this movie and it's some other version of Gatsby. And so everybody's like, whoa, what's going on? And I think that's the reason why people are having such a strong reaction to it. The other reason I think people are having a problem with this is that, you know, this movie is so naked in its excesses. I mean, if you hated Moulin Rouge, you should not watch this. Right. Because
that's what I was going to ask you. I have a ton of questions
for you. You are bombarded visually with so much constantly in this movie. I mean, there's no reprieve.
Okay, so my problem with Moulin Rouge is what was not that. So I saw that this is visually, like, so stimulating. It's like being on an acid trip.
Right.
To me, but it looks like style over content.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Absolutely. A, it looks like style over content and story. Secondly, the problem I had with Moulin Rouge, and I was going to ask you about this, is I hated the character singing. It just didn't work for me. In this film, it looks like there's a huge amount of modern pop music on a 1920s...
Is this a musical?
In the sense that...
Thank God.
There's a ton of modern musical score. Right.
So nobody breaks into song.
Right, yeah.
Except for one instance. Nobody breaks into a song. But I was just going to say, not only are you visually bombarded, because there's so much happening on the screen.
Color
and just movement. And, you know, there's like a 10,000 extras at any given time. And, you know, glitter. And it's 3D. And good use of 3D. If you're gonna watch, I think nobody would think to do a 3D adaptation of an old musty classic. But good use of 3D because it's Baz Luhrmann. But on top of it, there is a near constant soundtrack to this movie. Okay,
right.
People are talking and there is, you know, a Beyonce song playing at the back, you know, and, you know, and so I think, and it's very deliberately anachronistic, you know, there's like rap music playing during these parties and so forth. But you know what? It works. To the extent that I've seen the movie and I went back on iTunes and you know, I wanted to look up some of those songs because we talked about Anna Karenina, which came out last year.
Yeah.
Okay. You can do a classic adaptation where it's, you know, the PBS kind, right? It's very, 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 you know, full fidelity to the original classic, the periods, people are saying them in the right accents and so forth. That's one way of doing it. I think, you know, if people don't know about it, that's a great way to introduce people by using that particular style. But the other approach is just completely take off stylistically, you know, which is what Anna Karenina did last year. You know, it's so beautiful to look at. And I agree, it's style over substance, but I admire that ambition. I admire somebody saying, I'm going to take this thing, you know, in a completely different direction.
But it becomes like genre mashup then.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? It becomes like a complete mashup. It's like saying, I'll take a random film and then overlay it in a random period and then put random music. You know, it's like saying, let's do Gandhi in, you know, gangster rap.
Right.
In,
while I admire it,
you know, directed by Francis Ford Coppola.
But if it works, it should work. I mean, okay, you have to be talented.
This is the thing.
To pull it off, yes.
While I admire that approach, I can't think of an example where it has worked. Can you think of an example where that idea where you take...
Oh, clearly, yes, he's saying this one.
Anna Karenina and this one, The Great Gatsby.
Both of which had mixed reviews.
Very mixed reviews.
It hasn't universally worked. Oh, I think it does split people then, right? I
mean, that's
the risk you take when you take a classic and you go in this stylistic direction with it.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question about it. I think a lot of people just get frustrated by, you know, by the tedious movement, the visual stimulation, it becomes too much for a lot of people. I was just drinking it in. So I think if it resonates for you, it resonates for you.
If you buy into it from the beginning, I think it sounds like one you're going to enjoy or you're going to hate it.
Correct.
Quick question for you. Go on. So I was going to say, to me, when I've looked at the trailers, it looks like Leonardo DiCaprio is the same character as the Howard Hughes character in The Aviator. Is that a fair assumption?
So that was exactly the point I was going to make is... I've really, really admired Leonardo DiCaprio in his very early roles. And we talked about, you know, Gilbert Grape and, you know, some of his early work. But in the last 5-10 years, I appreciate what Leonardo DiCaprio does, but I never really get him. I don't understand why everybody calls him like the greatest actor of his generation. He just seems somebody who kind of was at a different frequency than me. By Jove, in this movie, I finally get it. I finally get the genius of Leonardo DiCaprio. He's brilliant here.
Really?
I mean, just the scene in which he's introduced to you. I mean, and maybe it's because when I read the book, you know, that character is so cryptic, mostly because it's written from somebody else's perspective, but it's so cryptic. But the way Leonardo DiCaprio inhabits it, I understood this version of Gatsby. And he's perfect for it. It's a very difficult role. You know, we can go into, you know, the plot elements, but, oh, he's so good here. And I've never said, I hated him in Django Unchained.
Loved him in
and,
Django.
You know, I didn't even get him in, you know,
Inception.
Departed or Inception or any of those movies, but, oh, he's so good.
Shutter Island.
Oh, God, bad. but he's very good here.
Okay, and then one last question I had for you, which is people have always said the Francis Ford Coppola version of Great Gatsby with Robert Redford was one of the greats. Did you ever see that one?
I did not. Is it Francis Ford Coppola?
Yeah, okay. He directed it.
So it had Mia Farrow and Robert Redford. No, I haven't seen that
one. Yeah, okay, so my question is irrelevant because I was going to say, how does this compare? But
the only other piece I want to mention is I wish the movie is taking so many risks stylistically with the music, with the 3D, with so many things. I wish therefore the movie had also taken a little bit more liberty with the story in terms of solidifying some of the dotted lines from the book. So, you know, this book was written, you know, in the 20s, 30s. When was it written? Way back. And so by definition, a lot of the themes are kind of alluded to and they're not spelt out. And I wish the movie had just gone out and made, like, you know, the Tobey Maguire character, Nick Calloway, he's the narrator for the whole story. And it's very obvious to me when reading the book as well as while watching the movie that his affection for the Gatsby character is more than just friendship. There's something there. He really, his love for Gatsby is more than just friendship.
Oh.
And I wish they had kind of played on that. You know, when you're doing a modern take on it, just go all out with
it. And a Baz Luhrmann.
The other piece, you know, the Daisy Buchanan character, the female lead in it, she is a piece of work. Okay. She's not a likable character. And I wish they had kind of thrown caution to the wind and made her, you know, Anders, right, you know, who's a film critic in San Diego, he mentioned that, you know, the movie is extremely forgiving of the Daisy Buchanan character. And you really find nothing wrong with the characters played by Carey Mulligan up until the very end. And then I remember, of course, the book is not, you know, does not get her off easy at all. And I wish the movie was a little bit more literal in saying, look, in many ways, Gatsby is not even deserving of her love. You know, she's not somebody worthy of being loved. And I wish the movie had brought that out.
I'm super excited to see this now.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, score.
So, you know, it's not for everybody. It'll frustrate most people in the first half an hour. I loved it, mostly because of its ambition. I'll fully admit it's style over substance, but I really enjoyed the whole cinematic experience of it. I give it 8 out of 10.
Wow.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. On par with Star Trek.
On par with Star Trek.
It really has split the critics down the middle. And it's interesting here because I'm on the Rotten Tomatoes page here. It's exactly at 49%. So, you know, half like it, half don't like it. What is interesting to me is that the Tomatometer also has an audience rating, the popcorn bucket. Mm-hmm. That's at 84% with 4 out of 5 people who are registered with Rotten Tomato. So out of 57,000 audience ratings, 84% are liking this.
The movie made a ton of money. It's the most money that Luhrmann has ever made. I think if you go in not knowing anything about The Great Gatsby or not expecting anything, you'll love it. I think so most
wisdom of crowds.
Memorial Day weekend film for us.
Most people, you know, they expect, you know, The Great Gatsby. It's a great American novel, and when you start to compare the adaptation to that, that's where it starts failing for most people.
Would you come again?
Oh yeah, I might.
Excuse me.
To watch The Great Gatsby, yes.
Okay, so let's move on to Iron Man 3, our third movie of the week. Yazdi, you want to give us the background on Iron Man 3? As if it needs an introduction.
Exactly, as if it needs an introduction. Iron Man 3 is obviously the third in the popular Iron Man film series. The movies and those three movies and Robert Downey Jr. have pretty much made each other famous. Here, Robert Downey Jr. teams up with his director from a little scene movie, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Shane Black was the director, and he teams up with the same director here. And Black has written all of the Lethal Weapon films and hence has been in the business for more than two decades. And this is actually only his second directorial venture. The film is the usual blend of snark, mayhem, and action that has been the footprint for all of these Iron Man films. And in this round, Iron Man has to contend with a terrorist who goes by the name of Mandarin and is all out to wreck up some serious damage. The movie co-stars Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper Potts, the lovely Rebecca Hall, Ben Kingsley as Mandarin, Guy Pearce, Don Cheadle, and Jon Favreau, who incidentally directed the first two movies in the franchise.
Which was interesting to me that he was in the movie but not directing it.
I thought he did direct it. No,
he directed the first two.
Oh, I thought he directed this one as well.
Oh, yes, he just said Shane Black.
Oh.
See, Rashmi was on Facebook. Close that Facebook. Can you? We're recording a podcast. Be professional here. Oh, my God.
I wrote down this beautiful introduction to no avail.
Completely dismissed by the third movie world. And Rashmi expects people to listen to this podcast.
I'm the jock. I don't listen. I just am.
Badly behaved. Okay, Miss Badly Behaved. Tell us what you thought of Iron Man.
Okay, so I hadn't seen any of the Iron Mans. Okay, I lie. I slept through the first 10 minutes of Iron Man 1, and then I decided to give it a miss. I was therefore a little bit apprehensive about watching Iron Man 3, which is the last installment of the trilogy in the end. But I'm glad to say I don't think that my lack of viewing experience of Iron Man changed anything, because I really enjoyed this film. It was a great action movie.
Joe?
I kind of wish that this movie had built a little bit more on Iron Man 1 and 2. I think Iron Man, the original movie, was terrific. There were some really good moments in that movie, both stylistically and narratively. Iron Man 2, I think, was a great action movie. I had a lot more fun watching it, although I recognized it wasn't as good as Iron Man 3. This, for me, was the weakest of the bunch. I think my overwhelming sense coming out of the movie was that it was, well, underwhelming.
Yes, D.
So my take on this movie is it's a good film by any chance, but it's not that good. I mean, I'm shocked at kind of this, you know, this movie has broken all box office records. It's only the second most successful movie ever. And, you know, it has this stratospheric reception. Everybody loves it. You know, it's made a ton of money overseas. And, you know, yes, it's very entertaining and it's exceptionally well made. And Robert Downey Jr., bless his heart, makes an absolute killing with this character. I mean, he is Iron Man.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can say this for a lot of other movies. And I don't think this movie was, you know, like the second coming of, you know, Jesus Christ as it's being made out to be. So I was a little underwhelmed from that perspective. And I have two other bones to pick. I mean, it's a perfectly good tentpole popcorn summer film.
Yeah.
But I don't think it deserves to have made as much money as it did.
Yeah. I mean, from my point of view, because I hadn't seen any of the other ones, I didn't have a point of reference. So in terms of seeing it as a standalone film, yeah, I found it very entertaining. I liked that it had, you know, had a good antagonist. It was an okay story. I think the thing that disappointed me about it was that it was too tongue-in-cheek. And when I compare it to something like Batman or, you know, like how I envisage Man of Steel is going to be, it was almost too comical and humorous and almost disposable and throwaway.
Yeah, I think that's where I had the problem as well. I think for me, the main issue was how dreary all of the Tony Stark quips started to become. I got really fed up of them. I mean, I love Downey Jr. in this role. I think he's perfect. Like you said, yes, he is Iron Man. But everything is a wisecrack. And at some point, I was just like, we got to dial this back a little bit, you know? I think what was an underlying charm of that character in Iron Man 1 and 2. You know, this cocky arrogance, mm-hmm. and then, you know, when he gets kicked down a notch and he has to kind of bring himself back up. That was missing here. I never felt as if he was truly downtrodden. He never, the character to me at least, never seemed to believe that all hope was lost. And
there's no humility.
I think, you know, for these types of movies to work, the hero has to be beaten down and then claw his way back to victory. Because that's a spine-tingling moment, right? That's the bit where we're all kind of going, yes, that didn't happen for me here.
But he is. He's kind of abandoned on this.
Up, but he's still this a little cocky Arctic son of a bitch all the way through it. And he never seems fearful. Okay. You know, there's a very dramatic moment towards the end where, you know, one would think that the character would be, you know, devastated and really try and...
Oh, I see what you mean.
When all hope is lost, right? That bottom point of the dramatic uh-huh. arc, you know, where, you know, as from our basic screenwriting class, where, you know, where the speech happens, right? Where the character has to dig deep within and... didn't happen. He was just like, you know, all right, now I'm going to go kick some ass and...
See, but it's exactly the same thing you said about Star Trek. You know, these characters are going to keep living. They're never going to. Nothing bad is going to ever happen to them.
So is the Dark Knight, right? But there is a horrible moment in that movie when all hope is truly lost, and you can't see the path back. And that, to me at least, that's where I get the big payoff. And that didn't happen for me here. And I think the Tony Stark character I like him a lot. You know, he's like the cocky, arrogant Bruce Wayne, and you know, I'm not a comic book expert here, but this movie just didn't have that. So as a result, it was a good fun action movie, but I didn't connect with it meaningfully.
Yeah,
I mean, I had two issues with it. One, you're going to poop me on this, but you know, why must all films, especially comic book films now, have to have a terrorist as a villain?
Yeah, you know, it's a really good, you know, point. It's
so annoying. You know, it's like, I know it's a sign of the times. It used to be the Russians, then it was the Koreans.
Now it's and the now North it's Koreans. The now
it's this, you know, and
hybrid terrorist.
It's, you know, but this vaguely Islamic looking. There's this whole thing about the Mandarin character early on. And, you know, I think, and you're going to hate me for saying this, but I think this movie suffers from a case of Nolanitis. You know, it really wants to be like the Batman movies, which are, you know, self-important and...
Nolan has never done that.
You know, grim and heavy and, you know, it's all about, you know, the horrible terror we live in.
Put your glass down.
No! Let's watch what Man of Steel... Let's see what Man of Steel does with the Superman character. If there's an Islamic terrorist group in Man of Steel, I'll say, okay, yes, you have a point.
It's not Christopher Nolan. He's just produced it.
No, he wrote it. He wrote it with the guy that David Goyer, who he wrote the original Dark Knight with.
Okay. So we'll see. But I
know. I think what Yas is. Let me see if I can interpret for you.
Yeah.
It's trying to. It's a comic book movie. It's lighthearted, but then they try and introduce this serious element, right, which doesn't quite jibe. I think that.
I agree.
Whereas all Nolan films are serious, full stop.
I completely agree with you, apart from the Nolan aspect of it.
It's a cheap shot. It just seems like it seems like too obvious.
I agree with you.
But Ben Kingsley makes a terrific villain in this movie. Like. He's up there. I mean,
Mandarin.
He's just like that whole.
But this is the thing. I think the film was trying to be smart, and it just got silly. And then the other problem I had with it was that I thought there were good effects, but at times I thought I was watching the Transformers.
Yes.
So this was my second pet peeve about the movie. Like the last 20 minutes seemed to go on and on, and you know, granted, I'm not that teenage boy who loves to see things blow up. But stop the demolition already.
More Michael Bay than it is Chris Nolan.
Yeah, right? I agree.
So much. Like, you know, do they really have to... And like when his home up on the Malibu Cliffs gets destroyed, it's like 20 minutes of things just blowing. Okay, we get it. Yeah. His home is destroyed. Do we need to see like every little brick fall apart? You know,
yeah, I agree.
And then that last whole set piece set on an oil refinery was endless. It seemed to go on forever.
The shipyard, you mean?
Yeah, I thought it was an oil refinery too. Yeah, obviously. Honestly, we're not people. Obviously Joe would be beaten up first, then Yazdi. Okay, let's wind this one up then. Anything else?
No.
Okay, Joe, you go first.
So I think this one focused a lot less on character than the first two Iron Man movies, and I think in doing so lacked the heart. Action choreography was great, but a little tiresome. Great special effects. I think there are a lot of Marvel Universe references here for the fans, because, I mean, obviously they were talking a lot of making Avengers references and things like that.
And so, Thor, there was a Thor reference.
Right, so yeah. I think not being quite as plugged into that universe as many, I think I missed some of that, which, you know, affected my perception of the movie, because there were obviously people around us having nerdgasms, but I wasn't one of them. But it's a good, fun action movie. I wouldn't hesitate to recommend it to anyone who wants to watch something over Memorial Day weekend. It's the weakest of the three, and it gets a 7 out of 10.
Yes, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've already harped about what I didn't like about it. What I did like about the movie is actually that, you know, contrary to what you said, I actually think this movie was more about the Tony Stark character than Iron Man compared to Iron Man 2. So it was more about, you know, the person is inhabiting the suit rather than who he becomes after he puts on the suit. I also like that Gwyneth Paltrow had a little bit more to do in this movie than in other movies. And
Rashmi didn't bitch about Gwynnie.
No,
here.
She actually. I didn't find her displeasing.
Yeah, but again, I don't think this movie deserves to be, you know, hyped and made out to be like the best summer movie ever, which it's being made out to be. Yeah. So I'm at a 6.5 out of 10, and I'll be gracious and maybe move it up to 7 like you. But
I think
it's a great way to spend a couple hours.
You know, Disney's investment in Marvel, I think, is creating these annual movies. And I think by tying them all into the Avengers, which is a really smart move from a business perspective, they've created a bunch of Iron Man fans, right? I mean, I think that's why this movie is doing so well. And it's a very, very astute move by Marvel and Disney to do that. They did that with the comic books, and now they're playing that same theme through in the movie. You know, good for them. But we're going to see sequels like, you know, Thor, and you know, we may see, I think, another Hulk movie, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, another reboot probably.
You know, so well, the Ed Norton one was well done, but you know, from a commercial perspective, I think we're going to see more and more of this over and over again. And I just wish that they would put a little more integrity into the universe for those of us who aren't hardcore comic fans. Because I think that's what is missing from something like this versus, you know, The Avengers was really nicely done. It was a more fun movie and less comic oriented. Yeah. You know, deeper characters. I think that was it. Tony Stark in this movie was a very two-dimensional character. He never seemed to go through very much, and I think That's why I didn't connect with it in as much as I did with Iron Man 1, especially.
Okay, let me give my score then.
Oh, you didn't give a score?
No, see again. No one cares about what
I
think.
I was waiting. I was waiting for your score. This time I was. The other time I thought you were done. But go on, Rush.
Sorry about that. You should have told me
we
to
do
shut up.
We do care
I
about...
I gave you the signal.
I was too busy talking to you.
Exactly.
We were nerds together.
I know. I'm definitely going to beat you both up now. Okay, for me, a great Friday night decompress. Nothing special, but very watchable. I'm going to give this one a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, probably it's more a 6 than a 7.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's wrap up the show for today. We're going to review 3 much smaller movies in our next episode. So until then, it's too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.
And now we're going to do a quick spoiler alert.
Yes.
Oh.
Because the moment in Star Trek... So this is a huge spoiler, by the way. If you're still listening and you haven't already seen Star Trek, stop the podcast now. The reason that everyone was laughing at the end, right? There were a lot of references
irradiated,
to
right?
Wrath of Khan, because it's the exact opposite of what happened in Wrath of Khan. In Wrath of Khan, Spock goes in to the generator, and he's the one that dies. So for me, I think everyone was laughing. I was thinking that was hilarious, because I'm like, oh, look, they pulled the switch on us. And then Spock does the whole, Khan!
Right.
Which is a classic Kirkism.
But the part where they were laughing is when you know, he's you know, irradiated or whatever, he's behind that little glass wall, and, you know, Kirk comes
hands.
And talk, and they touch hands, and everybody was giggling, because, you know, they were doing the little thing, like, you know, you're my best friend or whatever.
I didn't notice that.
But
okay.
Maybe they didn't laugh.
Did they laugh in our screen showing with
no,
that?
No, I don't think there were that many people in our one.
Okay. Well, we weren't at the same one, were we?
No.
I went for
we
the
watched
screen,
it last
yeah.
night.
No, we watched Iron Man last
oh,
night.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Rashmi. The laugh laughing.
Yes, oh, you don't remember people giggling?
Like the alternative universe.
Obviously, I was too touched by the hands touching.
No, I wasn't touched, okay. But I thought it was a good moment.
I liked people it. It gave me a lump in my throat.
Yeah.
I didn't get a lump.
So I completely missed out on the whole flip with the Wrath of Khan. Completely missed. I didn't get that. Yeah. And now that you're mentioning it, it's vaguely, you know.
It's, I mean.
Joe's going to make us watch it again. He's going to make us watch
it. Do you have it? Can I borrow it?
Do you have it?
It's on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
Just watch it. And
streaming?
Netflix streaming.
Oh, okay.
And like, honestly, it's going to be one of the best 2 hours you spend watching a movie this week if you watch it. Promise you. It's so bloody good.
Okay.
And it stands the test of time. Anyway.
But it's got
William Shatner. So that was...
Let's carry on.
So that was the spoiler. I may or may not keep that in, but there we go.